And now let's rejoin Tamihere Talks with your host, John Tamihere.
Yeah, kia ora, hui hui mai rā tātou katoa. Now, our first guest for this evening is, actually I don't know whether you're a professor or a doctor or whatever way you want to be called with the honorifics, but it's Grant Duncan. And Grant, he does hold a PhD anyway, but he teaches in the politics program at Massey. He's also a author of books, The Problem of Political Trust, The Conceptual Reformulation and How to Rule, The Arts of Government from Antiquity to the Present, and he's an active commentator on public affairs in New Zealand as well. One of the few academics that's willing to actually have a voice and actually express it. most of them all get beat up for doing the same, Grant. Why is it? You know, in my day, I've got to tell you, in the 80s, when I was in early 80s in the campus at Auckland University, the Faculty of Economics and others were very vigorous participants in our political diatribe and debate. But something happened and everyone seems to be censored. What occurred?
Oh, kia ora, John. Well, what occurred? Well, frankly, I don't know, to be honest. I'm at Massey University. I get a lot of support from upper management for what I do. If I publish a column in The Conversation, for instance, I usually get a wee email giving me the thumbs up for doing that. And I just think that academics themselves feel a little bit, maybe a bit afraid or overworked or something. I don't think that there's anyone out there beating them up and stopping them from getting into the media, but it is a scary space to be. And I think particularly for women academics, it is quite scary.
Yeah, well, it's quite scary for some women politicians, particularly if you lead the Labour Party. So listen, thanks very much for coming on. There are a number of questions that I just wanted to put to you because is it a fair proposition to put to you that polls drive voter sentiment?
Up to a point they do. There is some research on this internationally, and obviously these things are complicated. You know, I mean, there's lots of factors go into what makes an individual decide to vote for one party or another. And there is a sense that there can be a bit of a bandwagon effect. And I think also in a system like ours, our MMP system with a 5% threshold, there can be a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak, for parties, small parties that are polling under 5%, where voters might be deterred from voting for them, even if they basically like that party and its team. They may be deterred if it's not appearing to reach that 5% threshold, and so it can be a bit of a feedback loop. And I think sometimes people are voting generally kind of second guessing what might happen based on the poll, rather than just keeping it simple and saying, look, which of the parties most closely represents what I value and what's important to me, and therefore who should I vote for based, you know, on those kind of matters of representation.
Okay, so this is what I'm discerning from your response to me. The answer is yes.
they do have an effect here. How much of an effect can be hard to tell. That's the thing. So it's not a straightforward A causes B thing, but they do have an influence, and people do watch them carefully.
Yes, they do, and that brings me to the integrity and the credibility and the ethics of people that stand behind polling companies, right? So you get, for our listeners won't be aware of it, but say Curia, is owned by and driven by a very vocal National Party supporter.
Yeah.
And if you look at UMR, it's driven by a very strongly Labour supporting person, Mr. Mills. So can you make an association because of the politics and out-the-gate politics that are expressed by either one of those two gentlemen, that has any effect on tainting the polling narrative? You see, the numbers are one thing, the narratives are different.
Well, that's a really good point you make here. There's the numbers, and then there's the interpretation of the numbers, particularly when they get turned into headlines, particularly, of course, headlines in the TV, you know, the 6 p.m. news on TV. Now, let me start from the assumption that basically it's in the interests of a polling company to be as accurate as possible. And I think that most polling companies are striving to be accurate because that's what they base their reputation on. The trouble is that, it's, you know, with the best will in the world and the best methods, it's actually getting harder and harder to get an accurate poll. And the problem basically lying behind that is that it's hard to get a sample, you know, 1,000 respondents or so, who reasonably closely resemble the bigger population that you're trying to estimate. And that's actually a hard thing to do. And it's not only in New Zealand. You see this problem around the world. You know, in the United States, for instance, they have a much, much bigger polling industry, obviously, there than we do. And yet they're facing a very similar kind of problem. So it isn't necessarily because the pollsters themselves are politically biased, because, as I say, they do have an incentive to be accurate and to get representative samples. There is bias sometimes in how polls are reported, and I've called one or two people out on that in the past. But, yeah, I think if we assume even that basically the pollsters are doing their job as well as they can, it is a difficult job to do. And there is evidence that they're not getting it really very accurate at all. And I think that doesn't mean that we should rubbish them. It just means that we, as viewers and listeners in the media, we should be treating these results critically and cautiously. That's all.
Okay, now tell me, just for our listeners, to unpack the issue around the difficulty of getting a representative sample of 1,000 punters that reflects middle New Zealand, that reflect housewives, that reflect the multiple cohorts that make up voter sentiment, voter populations.
Yes.
Can you step us through what the difficulties are in achieving a fair cohort, for the want of a better way to put it?
Yeah. Well, pollsters would first of all start off relying on the census to get an idea about the demographic makeup of the voter population. The 2018 census had problems to start with. Secondly, you've got to actually reach a representative sample of people, and that can be difficult now.
What do you mean by representative?
Yeah.
What gets you to a representative number out of 1,000?
Yeah, well, within that 1,000 or so people, there should be a mix of people that reflect fairly the gender, the ethnicity, the age, and the education levels and occupations that are, you know, you would expect to find in the voting population. Now, there are statistical things that you can do after the fact to weight the, you know, the results from individual subgroups to, you know, fix things up afterwards, so to speak. But that's not ideal. But, yeah, you want to get out, you know, that 1,000 people has to resemble the demographics of the voting population. Now, I think you can see already that that's, you know, going to be a difficult thing to do, especially when people who, you know, are using landlines a lot less, that you know, you can do robo-calling on cell phones, but a lot of young people in particular are just not picking up the phone, particularly if it's an unidentified number. And, you know, they're not getting responses, I think, a lot from younger people. It does seem to me that the people who are difficult to get through to will be people who are poorer and people who are young, and particularly left-wing young people. And that was really evident in the error that was made in polling in the Auckland Central electorate before the last election, which failed to pick up that Chloe Sprawbrick was going to win that electorate, and it was putting her, those two polls were putting her in third place in that electorate race, and she went ahead and won it. Well, it suggests you straight away, doesn't it, that young lefties in central Auckland simply weren't being properly polled, and the results were really inaccurate, grossly inaccurate, I'd have to say.
To what extent is Auckland Central an outlier, given like a youth full population, high density of apartments and flats,
yeah,
and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is an unusual demographic to be sure, but on the other hand, if you're polling Auckland Central in particular, then you really ought to be onto that and doing something about getting through to, because you know you can get population statistics of individual electorates and go, well, we have to get a sample that matches that demographic profile. Clearly, the two polls failed to do that. And I think we have, you know, going back to the results before the 2020 election, you can see fairly clearly that the polls going into that election in the few weeks before the 2020 election were underestimating Labor, overestimating National. So what we have in New Zealand is kind of the opposite of what happens in the United States. So our pollsters, our respondents, our participants, potential participants in New Zealand polls, it's the Labor supporters who are the reluctant ones. In the US, it tends to be the right-wing Republicans who are reluctant to answer polls. And keep in mind, it's not just getting people to answer your call and talk to you. You've got to get them to answer truthfully. A lot of people, I think, willfully lie to pollsters as well.
What evidence is there of that?
Well, people say so.
Yeah.
You can hear, you know, people will say I lied because I want to mess with their minds. And you know, there's a certain degree of suspicion, particularly in, you know, you can imagine in the right wing Republican circles in the US, there's a suspicion of mainstream media and therefore a suspicion of pollsters. A lot of people just don't want to answer official polls over there. In New Zealand, for some reason, the ACT and National supporters seem to be quite happy to respond to polls. It's Labor supporters who seem to be reluctant. So going into the 2020 election, Labor was you know, significantly underestimated. So when I say significantly, I mean, you know, Labor got 50% famously in that election, but the polls going ahead of that election were estimating Labor at levels that were outside of their margin of error. In other words, that means that these errors were not random. They were systematic, methodological incorrectness.
Right. Now, if we could turn our minds to minorities. And so you have Māori on a population base around 17-18%. Here's the problem. 2018 census was just an abysmal failure in our communities.
Yes.
The undercount was would have been huge.
Yes.
And we roll forward to the pandemic, and the proxy numbers chosen by the Director General of Health in Tāmaki Makaurau alone, he chose a proxy of those attending medical services over the 2020 year, and use that as the proxy number for vaccinations across the country. Now, clearly, well, I can tell you this now, 60,000 Māori did not go to their GP in all of 2020, and so they were not counted. Now, these are big numbers, right?
Yeah.
And so what I'm putting to you is, and most of our people, a third of our people shift every election. So itinerant is their difficulty. And so when you start to look at that population and you look at the polls, particularly in regard to the Party Māori, which doesn't have a problem because we'll win a seat and then we'll balance the hub off that. But when you're looking at numbers in terms of a tight election about where people could put their preferential vote for the one of them, because NNP actually makes polling quite important with respect, other than first past the post. Because first past the post, you know, in your electorate, that you're a swing electorate and that your vote actually counts, right? More than others.
Yeah.
So when I look at the polls and I look at the ethnic makeups of them, it's just not, it's very difficult to say that you're actually engaging with that population on general polling terms. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it certainly appears to be true, John, just looking at the figures. So, if we go back to 2020, Te Pāti Māori got 1.2% in the party vote. but the polls leading into that were half or less than 1.2%. And so once again, Te Whatu Māori was underestimated by the polls. And so now looking at the most recent polls this year, Te Whatu Māori has been scoring, say, well, above 1.2 anyway, 1.4, 2.6, 3.5 are some of the figures I'm looking at recently. And so once again, I would assume that in all probability, Te Whatu Māori has been underestimated. But I can't say that with any certainty until the election comes along, can I? Because we're comparing here, our main criterion is the actual election result. And that is affected by voter turnout. And so here's one of the other problems for pollsters. It's not just getting a representative sample. It's getting a representative sample of voters that is a problem. And turnout, therefore, can affect them. And the turnout in 2020 was probably higher than people expected. And so, and we also know that turnout among Māori is lower than non-Māori at all age groups. So there's a whole number of moving parts there that affect our estimate, but it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect that the current polling of Te Whatu Māori is a little bit of an underestimate.
Yeah, and that in the consciousness of switched on voters counts.
Because there is an element of self-fulfilling prophecy with these polls, yes.
Yeah. So now, just pretend you, I see you've written two very good books. I regret I haven't read one. but just in terms of your thesis, which is a very important question that you pose, the problem of political trust, right?
Yes.
What was the kaupapa behind you writing that title and then writing the book on it?
Oh, a really good question. Thank you, John. Yeah, well, trust is something that we understand in between people, people we know. But at what level, can we start talking about political trust? And so that could be trust in government generally or trust in individual politicians. And when we vote, even though we may not trust politicians individually, we are actually entrusting a great deal of power in lawmakers and people who form a government and go on to lead the country and so forth, as you'll know in your former career as a politician.
Mm.
And so that we're putting a lot of trust in people, but it's not a blind faith, because it is highly conditional, and it's clearly at least conditional on the next election. If politicians breach our trust, if they break promises, if they're completely incompetent or something, well, we can vote against them. But I think where you're possibly heading with this, John, is that with the effects of colonisation and so forth, trust for Māori would be particularly low, I imagine, and it's a particularly live issue, and it's something that I guess we're working on as a country. We really need to build somehow, you would have better ideas about this than I, build trust in Māori communities in government so that they actually feel like it's worthwhile going out and voting, because we know, for instance, that voter turnout in the Māori electorates is consistently low compared to other electorates. I think it would be desirable to come up with some constructive ways of turning that around.
Yes, well, when you're locked out on Māori options for 5 years, which in effect is two elections, and it goes on and on, you get dumbed down in regard to your ability to think that you're a stakeholder in the event on the day. And there's a whole lot of that. But anyway, look, we'll move on from that. It's a fascinating discussion, and one that can get your head blazed over if you're into conspiracy theories over polls. But but I'm not, and I'm really grateful that you come on and reaffirm that it is a scientific modelling. But like all modelling, in regard to access to getting the right cohorts consistently across the right mode. So you have monthly pollsters like Curia and Roy Morgan, then you have quarterlies and like Canberra, yes. so on and so forth. So it's very interesting to see exactly how these things ride. I just wanted to thank you very much for clarifying and giving some transparency to our listeners and those people that pick this up on our podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, John. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's been a pleasure, Grant. Thanks very much, mate. Kia ora.
Okay, kia ora.